be.
Shall not be.
In this regard, also, in deciding what is truth and what is not truth.
In deciding what is truth and what is not truth.
Bahuri Chai.
Bahuri Chai.
By the Shruti mantra is known as Bhavricha Shruti. Which are evident from the Vedas. Gitam,
what has been spoken.
Shinu,
just here.
May,
from me.
Asura Satama, O best of the Asuras.
Satyam,
the truth is.
Omniti,
preceded by the word Om.
Yat,
that which,
Proktam,
has been spoken.
Yat,
that which is,
Na,
not preceded by Om.
Iti,
thus.
Aha,
it is said.
Anritam,
untruth.
He,
indeed.
Tat,
that. Translation.
Oh,
there's only translation here. One might argue that since you have already promised, how can you refuse, O best of the demons? Let's take from me the evidence of the Bhavricha Shruti, which says that a promise is truthful, preceded by the word Om, and untruthful if not. Text 39. Satyam pushpa palam vidyad atma vrikshasya giyate vrikshe jivati tannasyad anritam mulam atmanaha. Translation: the Vedas enjoin that the factual result of the tree of the body is the good fruits and flowers derived from it. But if the Bali tree does not exist, there is no possibility of factual fruits and flowers. Even if the body is based on truth, there cannot be factual fruits and flowers without the help of the Bali tree. Repeat. The Vedas enjoin that the factual results of the tree
of the body
is the good fruits and flowers derived from it. But if the Bali tree does not exist, there is no possibility of factual fruits and flowers. Even if the body is based on untruth, there cannot be factual fruits and flowers without the help of the Bali tree. Shri Prabhupada's purport: this shloka explains that in relation to the material body, even the factual truth cannot exist without a touch of untruth. The Mayavadis say Brahman, Brahma Satyam, Jagan Mitya. The spirit soul is truth, and the external energy is untruth. The Vaishnava philosophers, however, do not agree with the Mayavada philosophy. Even for the sake of argument, the material world is accepted as untruth. The living entity entangled in the illusory energy cannot come out of it without the help of the body. Without the help of the body, one cannot follow a system of religion, nor can one speculate on philosophical perfection. Therefore, the flower and fruit, pushpa palam, have to be obtained as a result of the body. Without the help of the body, the fruit cannot be gained. The Vaishnava philosophy therefore recommends yukta vairagya. It is not that all attention should be diverted for the maintenance of the body, but at the same time, one's bodily maintenance should not be neglected. As long as the body exists, one can thoroughly study the Vedic instructions, and thus at the end of life, one can achieve perfection. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita 18.6, Yam or 8:6 Yam Yam Vapi Smaran Bhavam Tyajan Dhyantakalevram. Everything is examined at the time of death. Therefore, although the body is temporary, not eternal, one can take from it the best service and make one's life perfect. Maham Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Puristai Buddha Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatun Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatya De Sitarne. Shukracharya wants more or less that Vali Maharaj go back on his promise. And he's giving all kinds of reasoning why it's a good idea and Shastric injunction. Just as Arjuna, before the battle of Kurukshetra, was giving Krishna so many reasons why he should not fight, and even he gave scriptural reasons why he should not fight. But ultimately Krishna, he waited until his friend Arjuna was completely baffled and said, Karpanya dosha pahata subhava prichchami tvam dharma samudha cheta yet shayak sanistita brui tam me shishasteham sarimam tram papanam. He said, now I'm confused about my dharma, what I'm actually supposed to do. In other words, dharma is not always so easy to figure out what one's own dharma is. There are two types of dharmas. One is called Swadharma, or they're both called Swadharma. One is based upon the bodily concept of life. In other words, as long as one is in the bodily concept of life, then one has certain duties to perform in relationship to the body. For instance, although we know theoretically that we're not male or female, still we have to act according to our dharma as male or female, according to our position, condition, nature. Otherwise, it would be usually quite embarrassing. And even amongst liberated souls, they sometimes set the example of how to act according to a conditioned nature. For instance, after Shukadeva Goswami left the womb of his mother when he was 16 years old, although he was he was a young man, but he was fully naked, completely naked, and he was walking, trying to get out of his house as quickly as possible, because he figured that if he stayed in his house, he'd become attached. That here he is with his father and mother, and they were quite attached to him. If he stayed there, he would have been treated like a little kid, although he was 16 years old and a liberated soul. Therefore, he left as quickly as possible, and when he was passing through one lake where there were ladies bathing completely naked, then they completely ignored him because they had some vision. They could understand that he was innocent. Being a liberated soul, he didn't see them as women or men. He saw them as souls. Therefore, they did not pay any attention to him. Although he was naked and they were naked, still they could understand that he had no attraction to them as so-called women. On the other hand, when Śrīla Vyāsadeva passed by the same lake trying to chasing his son, trying to call him back to his family, then the ladies immediately covered themselves. So Śrīla Vyāsadeva said, well, when my son passed by, you did not cover yourselves, and when I pass by, you do. But we're both on the same platform of realization. So why is it that you're covering yourself when I'm passing by? So the lady said that, well, you're a householder. So although you may be a liberated soul, but as a householder, you have to discriminate between a man and a woman, or else how can you be a householder? So Śrīla Vyāsadeva thought, well, that makes good sense. Therefore, as long as we're in conditioned life, or even if we go beyond conditioned life in our liberated state, still we may have to set the example for others. So everyone, as long as we're in the conditioned state, the Swadharma has to be properly judged. And the Swadharma in the liberated state, that is given by the spiritual master how to execute devotional service. But here we find that Shukadacharya, he's obviously not claiming to be liberated, nor his disciple Bali Maharaj liberated. So he's trying to juggle the dharmic injunctions in such a way as to make sure his economic development does not become impeded, which would jeopardize his sense gratification. But as we know, that economic development is not, or dharma is not meant just for economic development. As a matter of fact, it's not meant for economic development. Economic development is there for everyone. As I quote the verse many times, dharmasihya pravargasya naratorata yopakalpate nartasya dharmaikantasya kamalavayahi smritaha. The dharma is actually not meant for economic development, because economic development comes automatically according to one's past karma. Just like before birth, that in the breast of a woman there is no milk. But as soon as the baby is born, then immediately there's milk in the breast. So it is not that the baby has to economically develop in order to survive. Look, kid, you were born and you're a burden, you know, get a job or do something productive. Then we'll give you some milk. No, it is all automatically provided by the material nature, spontaneously, automatically. Similarly, along with our birth, all the means for economic development and sense gratification were automatically provided. It's all been arranged. It is not that all the animals, in times of difficulty, they have to get an extra job in order to maintain themselves. No, you never find that the birds or the animals or the trees or whatever, they're working overtime because there is some economic, there's a recession in the animal kingdom. Now, this is all artificially made by violating the laws of material nature. So dharma is not meant for economic development. Dharma is to teach us how to utilize economic development and sense gratification to help us achieve liberation. Therefore, this idea of juggling dharma around, especially when the Supreme Personality of God is involved, is not very much appreciated. Just like we find here that he said you didn't chant Om, but Om is simply the symbolic representation or the representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes before you personally and asks for a donation, and you say, well, can't really give you one because I didn't chant Om. It won't be very much appreciated by anyone who's honest. So of course nowadays people don't hesitate to say any lie. They don't feel there's any real difficulty, because people have no idea how the material nature works. Therefore, they think I can say anything, I can promise anything, I can have any duty and not fulfill it, and what's the difference? As long as I get a place to sleep and something to eat, then everything is all right. But as long as one is not on the platform of the mode of goodness, then one will simply be forced, as I quoted before, evam mana karma visham pranyunte avidyatman yupadiyamane Pritirnavyavan maya vasadeve namunchate deha yogena yadva. That as long as one is evam vishyam karma vishyam pranyukte, overwhelmed by the dictation of the illusory energy. So our consciousness is important. It is not that only eating, sleeping, mating, defending is important, and where our mind wanders to, what we're attached to, what we're thinking about, has no significance. Because people, there is no problem for most people. In other words, there's no difference between their activities and what they're thinking about. They're thinking about eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And that's what they're doing. They're eating, sleeping, mating, defending. just like the animals. There is no difference. There is no contradiction between what they're doing and thinking. And as Kali Yuga progresses, there will be less and less distinction between what people are thinking and what they're doing. But those who have a little bit of a human quality, what to speak of a spiritual quality, they may find some contradiction. They may try and be thinking about some kind of regulation, just like Christmas, if you call it that nowadays. Of course, Christmas was a pagan holiday. There was it's the winter solstice, the longest day of the year. And the Christians, they were very intelligent in that they would take the pagan holidays, because the pagans were the predominant denomination at that time. They'd take all the pagan holidays and they'd celebrate their holidays at the same time. That way they'd be able to gain some popularity. And there was some hundreds of years ago, there was one priest named Father Nicholas. And he used to give little kids some presents once in a while. So they took 1 + 1, they made 2 out of it, and they added Father Nicholas, called him Santa Claus, the one who goes around giving all the little kids nice presents. So they made that into their most religious holiday of the year. So during Christmas, the people are supposed to be a little religious, a little bit God-conscious. Of course, we can see people are not religious and God-conscious for the most part during Christmas, during the so-called holiday season. They're simply interested in economic development and sense gratification, mainly their own economic development and their own sense gratification. They're always trying to figure out how I can spend the least and get the most. That is, I'll spend the least on the presents, because they keep a list, probably, some people, of what presents they received last year from so-and-so. They figure out how much it was worth. And they figure, if I buy so-and-so such a present and it's cost less than what they spend on me, then so much is my profit. In this way, what's supposed to be a religious holiday based upon God consciousness has been perverted into a simply eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Just like on the day of Christmas, it is one of the days where they have a marathon, just like the devotees are having a marathon to distribute love of God. So their most sacred day, they have a marathon to see how much they can eat, how much intoxicated they can become, or if they're fortunate, how much illicit sex, and maybe you're living in the right place and go and gamble. Of course, their whole life is a gamble anyhow. So, for them, there is no distinction between what they're speaking about, what they're thinking about, and what they're doing. It's simply animal life. But human life is not meant for such an animal life. And therefore, sometimes when one receives higher knowledge, one starts to notice that there's a difference between what one is thinking, what one is doing, and the philosophy of life, what one should be doing and what one should be thinking. Therefore, there's some conflict. So often we find that devotees are conflicted. And the materialists think, oh, these poor devotees are so conflicted, they're repressed, they really want to enjoy their senses, but their philosophy based upon mythology is restricting them from the real goal of life. That somehow or another they restricted themselves, they can only eat vegetables, they try to act as if they're moral and religious like that, but we know that inside they're all conflicted, they're just like animals like the rest of us. So, trying to become a human being in a society of animals is actually quite difficult. One stands out. As Prabhupada one time, he was asked in New York, a reporter asked him that, Swamiji, it appears that your followers, they seem quite different from everyone else. So Prabhupada said, yes, they have to be different because they're spiritual. If they were the same as everyone else, then they would be just like everyone else, interested simply in eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Perhaps in modern society there is some, you can go and major in philosophy. There are rare people who major in philosophy. But generally their philosophy is about a philosophy of why it's good to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Nowadays, people aren't interested in philosophy. They've concluded that they already have a, you know, it's already been resolved that we are made out of matter and that there's only one goal of life, that is to enjoy as much as you can, and that when you leave this body, you don't really leave the body, you just disappear. And therefore, even if there are such things as Yamadutas, they can't really find you because you're not existing anymore. So there's nothing to worry about. So with such a philosophy, people are becoming, trying to advance towards a spontaneous platform of sense gratification, where they can enjoy sense gratification without any hesitation, without any remorse. They don't have to feel guilty about eating animals, or eventually the platform will come, they'll eat each other. And they won't have to feel guilty about it. Because after all, they've invented a philosophy, so many, those who have a philosophy, that the animals have no soul, children in the womb have no soul, and eventually they'll have the philosophy that the old people don't have any soul either. That once you stop producing, it means the soul left. If you're not economically producing anything, then you couldn't have any soul because you're useless to the society. And therefore, the best thing you can do is donate your body to the rest of the society who are productive, and they can utilize it for something productive. Namely, they can eat it and get some strength to produce more things. So that time is coming too. When they're singing your happy birthday, you know, when you're 60 years old or 65, happy birthday to you, then, you know, everyone's very happy and you may be part of the feast. Prabhupada said that in certain parts of the world they already have that. They have the grandfather celebration. And they take the grandfather in certain parts and they take him up to the roof and they roll him off the roof. And if he's still alive, then they take him up to the roof again and roll him off the roof until he dies. And then they have a feast celebrating the death of the grandfather. And they eat the grandfather. Especially they want to eat his brains because they think, well, he's been around for a long time, so he's very wise, so his brains must be very powerful. So that time is coming in so-called, even in Australia that time will come. Hopefully not too soon. But the material nature works in such a way is that if one is interested in only these topics, then the result is one will become degraded. And one becomes interested only in these topics because the interest in other topics diminishes. Or we could say that if one doesn't follow what one is speaking, then the result of what one is speaking, for instance, if one is speaking higher topics or any kind of higher topic, if one doesn't follow the higher topic, then the sound vibration becomes less meaningful. As they say, there is a famous story to illustrate that, coming from the Western world, the little something who cried wolf. What was her name? That's the boy who cried wolf. So this is that he kept every time he kept on crying wolf. He would come see where the wolf is, protect the little boy. But there was no wolf. He was just falsely crying wolf. And then one day when the actual wolf came to eat him, he cried wolf. And everyone said, oh, here he goes again, wolf, wolf, wolf. And therefore the wolf came and ate him. Similarly, if we talk about something, for instance, we make some progress, some promise, or some commitment, and we don't follow it, then it becomes less powerful until it becomes meaningless. Just like, for instance, at Prabhupada was very surprise when he came to the Western world to give initiation, follow six, chant 16 rounds, follow four of the principles, or marriage. People get married and the next day they get divorced. So Prabhupada was quite surprised that people had no regard whatsoever for their promises that they made. Every time they made a promise, they're always crossing their fingers. Prabhupada was wondering why they keep on crossing their fingers every time they made a promise. But people think, well, this is all right, no problem, because there are, in the background, they're thinking there are no laws of nature. The material nature is just working arbitrarily. We can do anything or say anything and it won't have any effect. We don't realize that every time we do something, it has an effect. Every time we think something, it has an effect. Every time we say something, has an effect. And that effect will either be to elevate our consciousness or to degrade it or to keep us on the same level. And out of all the different possibilities, saying something and not doing it results in a lot of problems for the soul. Because if we say something, especially if it's meaningful, we make a promise that's meaningful and we don't keep it, a commitment and we don't keep it, then the result is we become degraded. If we promise, for instance, to chant 16 rounds and we don't do it, then the result is that it becomes ever more difficult now and in the future to take it up again, especially if we don't realize the seriousness of the promise. That the idea is that if one makes a vow and a commitment, then one has to keep it, and then it becomes more powerful. The ability to follow the vow becomes more powerful, and one realizes the result of following the vow. And if one doesn't follow the vow, then it becomes more and more difficult to follow it. And then all the good results from following the vow, they disappear. They never realized. And then one's whole conception of life is given. In other words, our present conception of life is given to us by the illusory energy and partially by the spiritual energy, by Krishna. But if one doesn't follow the process of spiritual elevation, then one is benedicted by the material energy with a certain conception of life, all which confirms one's not following the vow in the first place. In other words, the illusory energy is so tricky, yoga is chalati manasa, that if one doesn't follow the process, then the material nature will give one so many reasons and arguments to make one feel good about not doing it. Matter of fact, it will become that one's philosophy of life, and one will preach it to others. That is so difficult, no one can really do it, it's just they're pretenders. Why don't you become honest? One sees someone actually following a vow, immediately you start preaching to them. Become honest, we know you really don't want to follow the vow, you're repressing yourself, just give it up and become happy like we are. Become a bona fide, certified animal, and then you'll feel good. Then you can live more naturally like the animals in the jungle and you won't have to be repressed and bothered by all these different conflicts that are going on in your mind. Because we know that you really don't want to follow the vow, but you're just forcing yourself to do it, and we know you couldn't possibly get any result from doing it, because otherwise we'd be doing it also. We've already tried it out. This is called Naradama. So Baladeva Vibhushan and Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura have given an explanation for Namam Diskritina Mudha Papadyante Naradama Maya Pritigyanam Asram Bhavam Ashritya. They've explained a little bit different from Prabhupada, but it's more or less the same thing. The difference between the Mudha and the Naradama and the Maya Pritigyana and the Asuras, Bhavam Ashritya, Suram Bhavam Ashritya. So the Naradamas, they've said, Baladeva Vibhushan specifically, that the Naradamas were devotees previously, but they gave up their devotional service and became just like ordinary animals, materialists. So how is that? It means that before they were Shudras, they worked in devotional service dutifully, became elevated to the platform of Vaishyas or whatever else, But then they got what they wanted and they gave up the process and they became Naradhamas. In other words, if we take the devotional service or any Vedic process with the idea that we're going to enjoy economic development and sense gratification from following the process, and then when we get what we want, we give up the process of devotional service because we figure that religion is meant for economic development and sense gratification. We've gotten it, so now we can give up religion. Then one becomes Naradhama or Mudha or Maya Pritigyana or Asura Balam Ashritya. One becomes into the demoniac realm, the Asuric realm. So one has to be careful to understand that the purpose of making a vow, purpose of following the principles, of becoming dharmic, is not for economic development and sense gratification. It's meant to help us to regulate these activities so that eventually we can come to a spiritual platform of consciousness and give them up, not for increasing them. As Prabhupada writes, dharmak prayojita kaitavotra paramoni matsaranam satam vedyam vastavam atra vidyavada. That religion, dharma, is cheating. That part of it's cheating. That cheating means to perform religious principles in order to get economic development for sense gratification. That's called cheating, because it's actually meant for moksha, for liberation from these things, not for cultivating them. Dharma priyojita kaitavotra paramoni matsaranam satam vedyam vastavam atra shivadam tapatra lamulana. It's meant to uproot the cause of the threefold miseries. Therefore, it's considered auspicious. So this is where we get our qualities of pure devotional service. One of them is Subhada. Subhada means auspicious. So Shivadam, auspicious. And the other is Klesha Agni. It uproots the threefold miseries. Threefold miseries are due to our attachment to this body, due to our long cultivation of economic development for sense gratification. So it uproots it. It's not supposed to secure it or grow it. The tree of sense gratification, economic development, it's supposed to uproot the tree. We're trying to water the root of devotion, not the root of sense gratification. Therefore, that religion, so-called religion, meant for economic development and sense gratification, is rejected as cheating. So here we could say that Shukracharya is exhibiting a type of tricky mentality, cheating mentality, because Vishnu is coming before Bali Maharaj and asking for something, which is the whole purpose of the Vedic literature, to offer something to Krishna, Om Tat Sat Iti Nirdesho. Or as Krishna says, anything which is performed as sacrifice, austerity, or charity, which is not offered to the Supreme Lord, is impermanent, is useless in this life and in the next. That's the real, more or less the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. What is that? Sharaya, Sharaya Paraya Papto Yat Karam Kritam Kriyat Asat Ituta Parda Nacha Tat Pretu Noiha. Anything done as sacrifice, charity, or penance without faith in the Supreme is considered useless both in this life and the next. So here Bali Maharaj has to make a decision whether he wants to follow Shukracharya to hell or to live in the material world, or he wants to go back to the spiritual world, and we'll have to find out what his decision is, maybe tomorrow. Any questions? Thank you. Is that a pen or a question? What's that? Can you learn? Yes, you can learn. You can learn how to become a cheater like Shukracharya. You can learn how to juggle words and confirm whatever you want to think from the Shastras. Therefore it says, Tarka Pratishta Shutayadi Bina Nasavri Shir Yasyana Bina Dharmasya Tadvam Nihitam Guhayam Mahatmo Yena Katasa Panda. So we can argue day and night that we both, as William Blake said, we both read the Bible day and night. I read black and you read white. So we can argue from that. Or we can read the scriptures, and whatever I like in the scriptures I write down in my little notebook, and it confirms whatever I want to do in the first place. And whatever the scriptures say that I don't like, I say, well, that's actually not meant for me anyhow. So we can learn how to juggle words and choose from the scriptures whatever we like, whatever supports our economic development for sense gratification. We can learn from Shukracharya how to do that more expertly than we already know. Yes?
Just because one thing about promising and not fulfilling the promise.
Yeah.
Basically, like, we set priorities, like we have like higher authorities for whom we tend to forget, you know, like if the person is not, if the person is an advanced devotee, we tend to have more.
We think that if I disobey the higher devotee, then I might get into trouble. So out of fear, we follow them.
Yeah.
And we think, well, this is an insignificant devotee. If I step all of them, well, what's the difference? That's what they're there for anyhow. Someone has to step on them. That will make them humble. After all, they're low in the, they keep on saying they're low in the straw in the street, so let's prove it. No, whatever we do, it may be somehow, just like if you water the root of the tree, the water goes to all the leaves and branches. So serving the higher devotee means that you're supposed to be serving everyone else. So if you don't serve everyone else, it means you've rejected the higher devotee too. Because the higher devotee, Krishna, ultimately, or a representative of Krishna, is representing Krishna. And all his instructions are meant for everyone, for all time. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says in Srila Jiva Goswami that if we come to the temple and we worship the deity in the temple, but we don't show respect to the other living entities, understanding that the Paramatma is within our heart, then our worship of the deity is just a useless waste of time. So to think I can respect higher devotees and disrespect lower devotees, then I'm wrong, because any disrespect to anyone means that we're disrespecting everyone, including the higher devotees. Because the highest devotee, the highest personality, Krishna, is in the person's heart. Just like we come to the temple and we offer obeisances in the temple because Krishna is here. So Krishna is in the heart of all of Yanti, so all of Yanti should be seen as the temple for Vishnu. And if we forget that, then we'll be neglecting Vishnu. Yes?
Even though the Krishna is the source of everything, we should not ask Krishna for anything.
Even if he's the source of everything.
And he's already supplying us so much.
Yeah, so what, should we ask him for something? No, we don't have to ask him for something. We can ask him for devotion. That's one thing we don't have. We don't have to ask him. He's already supplying. So the purpose of going to the church is not to ask God for something. It's to give God something. That's why in the Veda culture, there's a little box there and you're supposed to put something in the box. You're not supposed to come and say, well, there's a box. It must be coming from Krishna. You must have known I was coming and you put a little box out there for me. That's not why we come to the temple, so that we can get the little box there that Krishna put out for me. Because I was so kind of come and see him, therefore he's become so overwhelmed with joy. He's put out a little box for me, I can take it home with me, show it to my wife. See how nice Krishna is. You should go and see him too, maybe there's a box for you there too. No, we're supposed to put something in the box for Krishna.
I thought that saying this morning that the elephants and the ants aren't worshipping God and they still get fed.
Yes.